Warning! This podcast exceeds the Surgeon General's recommended limit of awesome! This is Nutty Bites.
Hello, Mixed Nutcases. This is Nuke Jess, and today we have a May the 4th Be With You episode. We're actually recording this on Alien Day, which is kind of funny, but this is being recorded for May the 4th. We're going to be talking about the Star Wars series, The Mandalorian. With me today, I have, as always...
Hi, I was going to have something witty about being IG-11, but that's not going to... Hi, I'm Tech.
Hi, I'm Tech 107.
I'm Tech. There you go.
And our regular co-hosts.
Hi. It's been too long.
I'm Jen.
And I'm Jason. And I promise I've not been drinking yet.
Yeah. Nice. And our other co-host from our Eastern Fortress, we have...
Hi, I'm Mark.
Totally ripped that off.
An old series that some of you might have listened to a long time ago.
Which is called?
Technically was called.
It's called Cool or Awesome or...
How about Epic? The Epic Show.
Yeah, that would have been a really good name.
Yes.
Is it Epic, the guys you did the My Little Pony episode?
Yes, yes, that's exactly.
God, I can't believe that's the one I'm remembered for. there was almost an edit there.
to explain to our fans and our wireless listeners on Twitch, Mark used to run a terrestrial radio show called Epic, which came kind of our sister show because it's actually very, very similar to the Nutty Bites podcast.
Yeah.
And we did
almost like they stole it, but they never heard of
me. They completely ripped it off. So the two shows sort of ran parallel, and we did a bunch of terrestrial radio stuff when we were in Fredericton, New Brunswick. And when the radio station took a bit of water damage, we were doing a fundraiser. And we put it out there that anybody who donated $50 to the radio station rebuilding efforts could pick a topic for us to talk about, and they'd have to like it. We'd have to like it. So, Zach Man, I'm looking at you, Zach Man.
We're looking at you, Zach Man.
Donated $50 and said, My Little Pony Friendship is Magic. Now, what was awesome is all the other hosts on the show had kids, so they had a pre-built-in excuse to watch this show, like, you know, Cabot with his daughters, but the rest of us didn't. So...
there were six of us on this episode, and there were supposed to be seven.
Like our friend was very fond of saying, it's like, I didn't watch four seasons of My Little Pony. I just fell asleep on my Netflix remote, and it made me watch four seasons. Uh-huh.
We liked it so much, we ended up doing two episodes.
Doing a two-part. Because you know what it is? It's a show for kids. It absolutely is, but that doesn't mean it's bad.
No.
Look, I don't like I don't like it, but I know it does sneak in some good things. It's like Doctor Who's, for example.
Oh, Doctor Who's. So Mark, on that note, who was the extra seventh guest that we were supposed to get?
Right. So, a stormy day, unfortunately, so he couldn't make his way up from where he lived, which was, just a few hours away. If you know somebody by the name of Robert Maya, you might not know him by his name, but if you remember the 300, the big monster guy in the 300.
How about if you're a wrestling fan? Who would you know him if you knew professional wrestling?
Oh, the Acadian Giant, I believe, is one of the names he went by.
And Kurgan?
There was another one. Kurgan. Yeah, that was the other one. I was never much of a wrestling fan.
How about if you really liked that movie Pacific Rim?
Oh, yeah. He was bleach blonde. Was he a twin?
He wasn't
a twin.
Yes, he was one of the Russians.
Yeah, he was one of the Russian guys, yeah.
That guy was going to be on the episode?
Yeah, yes. That guy.
He was on a different episode of Epic, but we were out of town.
Yeah.
I would suffer through My Little Pony Friendship is Magic to meet that guy. That'd be dope.
Now, what was really funny is that he came on the radio station to be on Epic. But there's a pro wrestling show that was on immediately after Epic, and my God, were they ever hurt when they found out that the actual pro wrestler was here to talk geek stuff and didn't want to be on the wrestling show.
The thing that I thought was really funny, though, is he had done an episode of Epic. It was completely impromptu. It was like, hey, you know, he was out to dinner with our program manager, and our program manager was like, you want to come on the air? What show do you want? And he picked Epic, and they had a really great time. And Mark here has a great way of keeping up with former guests. And they had a conversation, and he mentioned that we were doing My Little Pony, and said, I want to be on that.
He even mainlined like a bunch of seasons. He watched it at home to get ready to have. He had like material ready and like day of. Instead of going to, because of the big storm, we didn't go to the station. We just went to Mark's house and we were actually sitting. He set up the board on the kitchen table. We're all sitting around. His daughters donated all of their My Little Pony toys. So we were like playing around with the toys, waiting for the recording. And then we get the message from Robert that he couldn't make it down because the storm was too bad from his part of the country.
Yeah, it washed out the road from his city to ours, but it was great times. But enough of that catching up. We're not talking about Friendship as Magic today. We're going to be talking about The Mandalorian. And
I feel like there's some friendship and magic in this show.
There, I believe there's quite a bit of friendship.
The
and
Mandalorian
magic.
Friendship is Magic? Oh, yeah. There's a crossover I want to watch.
Please give me some web shorts of that. But I do want to give a very special thank you to our out-of-the-box patron for this episode. Thank you so much, Cookie Druid. Thank you for this. And that's all I'm going to say.
I could have sworn you were going to go into, I really want to thank our sponsor, because that sounded like a sponsor thank.
No, it's a patron thank.
Oh, well.
It's kind of the same thing.
What do I want to talk about? The food I used to make dinner, the mattress I slept on, the earbuds I'm wearing, or what VPN we're using?
None of those things.
How you built your computer, or how you made your website.
Right.
Or how many different services?
No, we want to talk about The Mandalorian. So Tech and I had been waiting. We really wanted to see this. When it came out, we went to our good friends. We were actually staying over our good friend's house before a showdown grading. And we watched the first two episodes that were out. Now, the two friends we stayed with are Mandalorians. They are Mandalorian cosplayers. They are in a Mandalorian guild.
They run the local Mandalorian chapter in the town they live in. They are, like, legit, as legit and bona fide as you can get as a Mandalorian. You know, the guy drives around with a Mythosaur sticker on the back window of his car.
Yeah. I do want to say that we are going to do a little bit of spoiler-free first, so let's make sure that we don't drop any spoilers, and then we'll put the spoiler wall down, and we'll talk about spoilers for the rest of the season.
Right, as Shane says, that Disney Plus UK is a little behind, so he's only up to episode 7. He's got another to go.
So,
I'm gonna have to bring up the episode list then. Make sure I don't.
Oh, episode 7 is the second...
Well, I'm going to frame this just so if you haven't seen any of The Mandalorian, you're going to be able to watch it without feeling like you've been spoiled. We'll do that first and then we'll go
into
it.
So can I start with my moderate rant?
Almost. So I just want to finish our little story. So we watched the first two episodes. Yep. We really fell in love with it and we were like, okay, we got to get Disney Plus or something. And we haven't been able to justify the extra expense because we weren't watching TV enough.
And now we're in quarantine.
Now we're in quarantine and we have the option and we were able to get through it. And we finished the series in less than a week. And we really tried to take our time, only watching one episode a day until the very last episode.
Right, and when we got to episode 7, you're the one that started hitting me going, we're not leaving it on this. We have to finish this now.
No, we couldn't. So if you haven't seen the series, know that those last two episodes, the season 7, episode 7, you're not going to want to get up and wait another day to watch the finale.
It might be a good idea to wait until both episodes are out to even start it.
Yeah.
Because if you can't tell, what we're hinting at here is that it's a two-parter. It's the only two-parter of the series, actually.
Now, and this is one thing I really want to bring up and I want to talk about. Something that I've been lamenting a lot, at least on the last few episodes of this podcast, is that I really hate that every single sci-fi show has gone to this, like, one season is one arc of a story thing. And you can't watch them out of order. You can't miss an episode. You have to binge or mainline or watch all the episodes back to back to back to sort of have it make a coherent story. Since Babylon 5, every sci-fi show has done this. And it really annoys me that I really want to get back to the monster of the week, to this episodic style format. And Mandalorian did it. We get 8 episodes. There is an overarching story that they're telling. But for the most part, those episodes in the middle, you can pretty much watch them in any order. They're each one is, you know, 44 minutes of a tight little story.
Yep.
That they go through, but it tells the bigger part. At the end, there's some resolution, not much, and enough to keep you going for at least another couple of seasons if they want to. And I love that.
And except for episode 7, I will say all of them end, and they end, and you don't feel like, oh my gosh, I have to watch the episode right now. Which I do like that when writing for streaming that people want you to binge. Sorry, I just got distracted by the chat. I'll go back to that in a minute. I do like that they write for that medium, but because this is something that's coming out every single week, I like that I'm able to say, okay, I'll put it down and I'll come back later and I can wait a week, except for episode 7.
So when we get to talking about Picard, which is definitely going to be after doing The Mandalorian, we got to do Picard. But one of my gripes about Picard is that Picard does not do this. Picard does not do the episodic content. Picard tries to tell an interlocking story.
It's like a big, long movie.
Yeah, over sets of episodes. I think that hurts that show. Because one of the things we love about Star Trek is just these, where we get to sit down and enjoy these moments with this crew. And wait for it. We end up with a crew in The Mandalorian, and it's great. And we have a wonderful time with them, and all of the characters are fun, and we get, you know, just a bit of time with all of them. And it's very much that, okay, here's a problem for this week, and we're going to deal with it. All right, next week, well, we handled that thing last week. Let's move on and go on. And it's a great thing. And I love the connections that they use to tie the story throughout without actually having to make each episode feed into one another. Carl Weathers, Werner Herzog, and
first off, Werner Herzog as the bad guy is awesome, and especially because the only previous experience I have with him in media that I've watched is when he was the filmmaker that was doing a documentary about a really, really bad kid that would smoke with cigarettes on the Boondocks.
Well, you know what, Werner Herzog, he, when it comes to filming and documentaries and movies and whatever, he's like royalty. Like he's up there.
He's so an amazing filmmaker, but his voice is just so good.
So to have him be the guy, like, he has a line in this that I love where he says, "Shall we have a drink to celebrate the end of our what is it? He says, "Shall we have a drink to celebrate the end of our collective narrative?" And I'm like, what, did you write that line? Like, what are you doing, Vernon? Like, this is not in this, this is not for a show about a baby alien traveling around with a space bounty hunter. Like, this was a live action version.
So I will say that we're gonna talk that there is a baby Yoda. They call it the child, but it's a baby Yoda. And you know what? You can't have gone anywhere on the internet without seeing that. So I'm not counting that this character exists as a spoiler. Just saying. You can't have gone anywhere without being spoiled about baby Yoda. We were spoiled about baby Yoda like 5 seconds after the episode aired.
You know what? It doesn't matter because he's amazing.
He's adorable. Jen, what are your first thoughts?
I was going to say that back to the whole episodal thing, like where they actually change up every episode. I have a really bad attention span and I get bored super easy. So I have a hard time watching shows. This one was a lot easier for me just because it had something different going on. Mm-hmm. I wasn't bored all the time. And like, not even gonna lie, like I was one of the first ones to watch the show when it first came out. So I totally knew about, like, didn't know about Baby Yoda.
Oh, you got the surprise. So tell us, what was that like, being surprised?
So when I first watched it, I did not know what universe this was, what timeline was, all of that. So I didn't know if it was literally Yoda or if it was, like, Yoda reincarnated or something like that. And so when he popped up his little head, and I'm sorry, he's just freaking adorable, I kind of squeed, and then I was happy after that.
And
so,
what another great thing about Baby Yoda is that it's not a computer generated effect. It's not actors acting to a tennis ball done on a green screen. It's a puppet, and it's awesome.
Now, sometimes it is CGI. Like, there's an episode where it gets thrown.
But it's not full.
No.
Yeah, but it's not. But it's, by the way, it gets thrown in my favorite episode of the series. But we'll talk about that when we get there.
It's very, very clear when it's a puppet and when it's animated. Mm. The movements are so incredibly different between the two.
Yeah, and by the way, Lucas and anyone else out there, Michael Bay, looking at you. Puppets work. Why The Thing is such a classic movie and holds up today. It's why The Dark Crystal, The Neverending Story, all hold up. The Labyrinth,
just stop. Shh. Never mention The Dark Crystal again.
I just want to say, like, to anybody that's actually watched a few episodes of this, snacks.
So, Kevin, what are your spoiler-free first impressions?
Okay, I've been trying to actually put these through my mind filter here just before you talk to me, because so much of it has spoilers. You've already mentioned Werner Herzog, and I'm going to say right now, I really wanted more of him. Mm. I wanted him to be a Sith Lord at the end or something like that. I think it would have been perfect.
Saying he's not a Sith Lord at the end?
Spoiler. I'm saying I wanted that. I'm not going to mention if I was disappointed or if I was happy. I'm just going to say that's what I wanted when upon watching the first episode, that's what I wanted to see happen.
Couldn't afford that.
I will also mention that the seventh episode, is it the seventh episode? That's the two-parter that you mentioned early, seventh, mm-hmm. I think, right?
Seven and eight.
Seven and eight, yeah. I was watching this series as they came out. So I did watch the seventh episode and had to wait. I was watching it with my wife, Stephanie, who's not much of a sci-fi fan. She's not a Star Wars fan at all. And she screamed at the TV. She was very upset. She wanted to see the next episode. So, I mean, that alone kind of...
I wish you had video of that.
And also my final comment about the series, and this is what I've been thinking the whole time, this is about as much Firefly as you're going to get without being Firefly.
Yeah. Like, I half expect to see dinosaur toys on the dash next season.
Well, there was even that one episode where they go down to a planet and they have to be the saviors of these, like, people that are fighting an enemy that's bigger than them. It's like, wasn't that, like, exactly at least two episodes of Firefly?
Well, there was a thing that Tech said to me, and I 100% agreed with it. It was, this is as close to a Western as you're going to get. And that's what Firefly was.
It has the spaghetti Western formula to it, mm-hmm. that episodic approach to it. And I'm still not exactly sure. I haven't gone through and done the second watch through yet. I was kind of reserving that to just before the second season dropped. I was going to go and kind of refresh myself. And I was going to do it earlier today, but again, you know.
Well, it's laziness. Okay, because you'll have done it by the time this comes out, because this is coming out on May the 4th, which is when the new episode is airing.
Right. And I'm not entirely certain whether or not my expectations were set so incredibly low by the last three movies. And, you know, just watching this series was like, oh, that's so much better after the crow's pecking me in the crotch, back of my face again. It's so much better now. Simpsons reference, if anybody gets that.
I agree with you, Mark. And I'm just going to come out and say it, that I think Mandalorian is the best Star Wars product so far, full stop.
So
in the chat before you start, Sassy says, I'm going to be truthful. I started watching it because of Baby Yoda, and I stayed because it was an awesome show. I like that. That's good feedback. All right, go ahead, Jason.
So what got me about this was not that this was a Star Wars thing. Jen will tell you, during my second deployment, I had some requests for things for them to be sent to me.
One of PG-13 podcast, PG-13 podcast.
Was a slew of Westerns to include The Good, the Bad, the Ugly, A Fistful of Dollars, A Few Dollars More, The Outlaw Josie Wales, High Plains Drifter, basically all the spaghetti Western. My second favorite episode of this, which is also the first episode with Gino Carano in it, is basically High Plains Drifter done over again, mm-hmm. slash mixed with Yojimbo or A Fistful of Dollars. And this is solidly a Western. The music is Western. The cues are Western. I like the Western. Music.
Don't throw that in with Westerns.
But they are. But it is.
It is. I mean, that theme music is so Western.
Good, yeah, Western.
And, I mean, and if you watch, every time the Mandalorian enters on the screen and does something dramatic, he gets his own guitar twang.
I'm going to say, I think the music is heavily influenced by Western, but it's got its own twist to it, just like very similar to what they did in Firefly, where they had this Oriental Western fusion of type of music. I can't really say exactly what it is in The Mandalorian, but it definitely got it's heavily influenced by Western. You really can't deny that's the instrument.
The thing about the spaghetti Westerns is that they're called spaghetti Westerns for a reason, is that they were all done by Italian producers and Italian directors. So there was a heavy Italian influence on what they thought Western culture was. So this is being a take on that, you get like an even further derivative thereof. And, you know, when I say Western, I mean like the spaghetti Western movies from the 60s and 70s. I don't mean I Wish My Beer Was As Cold As Your Heart, She Thinks My Tractor's Sexy, you know, Western, which...
Look, if you don't have a squinty-eyed gentleman chomping on a cigarillo... In a duster and a large hat, it ain't a spaghetti Western.
You walk into the saloon and the piano player stops, and it is a piano, not a piano.
You know, and also, like, I love there are some quirks to what happens in the show to let you know that you're watching a space Western. The first episode, like, there is a fight in this bar. For no reason.
No reason.
they even had the space doors that kind of open. You know, instead of the two flappy doors, they had the iris instead. But it was very much the entrance of a spaghetti Western.
I mean, even the Mandalorian's combat style. He quick drew on that guy. Like, he drew down on that guy like his name was Doc Holliday. Like, yeah. Let's just be real. Like, and it's so... fun. I think that's one of the things that we have been missing from a lot of the recent Star Wars films, except for in small spurts. And it's the fun. It's like there are moments with Baby Yoda that are adorable and cute, but they're also fun. And it's again for all you anime fans out there, if you've not read or seen Lone Wolf and Cub, you should watch it, because Lone Wolf and Cub is The Mandalorian. Like, this is what The Mandalorian was before The Mandalorian.
Okay, but let's not turn people off The Mandalorian because they don't like Westerns, okay?
No. Lone Wolf and Cub is the story of a samurai who wants to get revenge for the murder of his wife, and he asks his kid to choose between the sword or a toy. If he chooses the toy, he'll kill the son and go on for his own revenge. But if the son chooses the sword, he's going to take the son with him on his journey for revenge, and the kid chooses the sword. And so it gets...
That's a horrible plot.
It gets ridiculous after that. There's a baby carriage full of weapons. It's amazing.
Oh, boy.
But the thing is that when we're talking about Western, it's more of a style of storytelling, yeah. Because... even
Stranger Comes to Town saves the town.
There's a style of storytelling that has very little to do with like the Western 1800s American, and more of a style of cinematography and a style of storytelling, because Kurosawa's samurai movies from the 60s and 70s are very definitely Westerns. And I mean, they've even done those crossovers. I mean, The Seven Samurai and The Magnificent Seven.
The same movie.
It's the same story, just done in two different genres. And The Mandalorian is just another skip down the road of that same style of storytelling. And it's done so good. Well, hey, one of the things that I couldn't skip past every episode is I had to watch the end credits, because the art, the storyboards at the end...
The art was so great.
Was so good.
It was gorgeous.
You could hang all of those up on your wall. They'd be so nice.
Well, that wall needs some art,
Well, we're not here for that much longer, so no. Maybe not that wall.
Maybe not that wall.
Maybe still the future that. Wall in the future, Nutty Bite Studios.
Nimlat Studios.
I'd like to give a shout out more to the technical side of things. I don't know if you've seen how they film this show, but they've broke new ground in the way they film it. One of the issues with filming kind of low budget is you tend to be on a green screen studio.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And matter of fact, even the high budget.
Sky Captain World of Tomorrow, I'm looking at you.
The recent Star Wars high budget movies have all been on these green screen sets. And mm-hmm. you can always tell when watching the movie, it's just there's something just kind of in the uncanny valley about the whole thing.
Well, it's really hard to give proper emotes to a tennis ball.
Well, that, you know? And the lighting is quite
light. Right.
Mm-hmm. The lighting that's cast on the actors is always slightly different than that which is in the background. So they're
sure.
never really – they're out of place somehow. It's very hard to pick up on it, but it's always there in the back of your mind. Now, you might think when you watch The Mandalorian, they're going to all these great locations and filming on those locations. No, they're on a set, and they have – what's called I don't remember the name of it, but what they use the game engine and they project the world on screens behind the actor, and they have the perspective of the screens shift with the camera. So as the camera moves, the background is actually rendered in real time and will move with the camera.
You don't mean Unreal, do you?
Yeah, it's the using the Unreal engine.
Are they real? Oh, that's awesome. Okay.
Yeah, and some virtual reality. Mm-hmm. Modifications.
That's really cool.
And what's really nice, you'll see these people, they'll walk up and like, no, I think the mountain range, the rocks that are in the background here, we could use a few more of them. So a guy will come up with a tablet and he'll just put up a few more rocks, or he'll change the time of day. And they have screens above and around the actor, and even in front of the actor sometimes, so that you catch the world on all the reflective surfaces. So like the Mandalorian especially is wearing this really shiny armor.
Mm-hmm.
So he always has the right light reflecting off of his armor, and it really does make him look like he's there at any given point in time. Now, of course, this rendering looks kind of askew from the actor's point of view because they're not looking at it through the camera, so it doesn't have that perfect tracking from their perspective. But when you look at it through the camera, it very much looks like they're actually there. And almost every single shot, not all of them, but almost every single shot in The Mandalorian was done in a small room with screens around the actors, and it there's almost no post editing done at all. I recommend anybody who's interested in that, check the YouTube video or go to YouTube and look it up. I don't know what the heck they're gonna call. There's a name for this technology and it escapes me, and I knew it just before we started this stream, and of course I forget.
So
now
one of the things that Tech and I keep saying is that The Mandalorian is the most Star Wars. It is so Star Wars. And the fact that they're creating new technology is so Star Wars.
Well, that's actually Star Trek. But well,
they both did, though.
The original Star Wars broke new ground in effects when it came out. Yeah,
ILM and Skywalker Sound and all of that, THX, all came directly from all their work on the Star Wars movie.
And let's not forget, by the way, that the original Enterprise model was created by ILM.
Right.
So they're very connected. Yeah.
One of the things that I have to say, being the martial artist that I am, is that for once, this is a sci-fi franchise that the combat doesn't piss me off. That the combat is actually
really
not bad. For one, they hire actual pro fighters to come in as mercenaries, so there's a top-notch one. But the gunfights look like gunfights. The wrestling and the grappling looks like wrestling and grappling. And the fighters all look like they're actually fighting in combat. And I love all the massive tips of the hat that they do throughout filming at the fact that stormtroopers can't shoot. Even when they got the scout troopers on the bike that are...
Not yet. No spoilers.
Saying that there's two scout troopers on bikes that can't hit crap is not a spoiler.
Oh, okay.
I'm not adding it into the rest of the story. I'm just saying that there's two scout troopers trying to hit a target with their blaster pistols on a bike, and neither of them can hit it from 10 feet away. You know, just all of these nods to the fans that stormtroopers can't shoot.
So,
and more overt. But, the other movies, the other Star Wars movies, did this very badly. I just rewatched the original trilogy, 4, 5, and 6. Han Solo, okay, Harrison Ford, my God, cannot gun act to save his life. What he would do is run through the screen doing this, waving his blaster pistol, and the guys at ILM would look frame by frame for every frame in which the pistol was straight, and then they'd animate a blaster bolt coming out the end of it. But if you just watch Harrison Ford's acting, it's him doing this for no reason, because lasers don't recoil. So there's no reason for him to have any sort of bucking in his arm. It's just him doing this for the whole scene until he runs up the gantryway of the Millennium Falcon or whatever. The prequel trilogy had guys sword fighting, which I don't know which martial arts choreographer they used. Ray Park, I'm looking at you. Was all based on how many twirly-doos and flippy kicks can we do in a shot without actually hitting each other, because twirly-doos and flippy kicks means that we're serious martial artists with serious combat powers.
Not everybody can be Yuen Woping.
So I do have one defense. I mean, let's not forget, before this, he was just a carpenter. And as FaZe points out in the chat, he does get better by the time he gets to Indiana Jones.
Crouching. No, when he just shoots the dude.
FaZe in the chat says, crouching solo hidden Wookiee.
He gun acts as well as Indiana Jones.
Yeah, but no, Tech, I'm very glad that you brought the choreography up, because that hints on probably my favorite character outside of the Mandalorian himself. And that is, oh God, what's her name? I have notes. Cara Dune, played by Gina Carano.
Tell us about Gina Carano. Tell the listeners who may not know who Gina Carano is.
If most of the listeners, I'm sure, have seen Deadpool, she's the one who kicks Colossus in the balls.
Yes, but before movies.
She is a professional fighter, and she is built for tough. Like, when... One of the problems I have...
Not sponsored by Ford. But if Ford would like to sponsor me, I'd like one of those new Ranger diesels.
Fishing for sponsors.
but when you look at some actresses in films and they're playing fighters or warriors, they don't look like they've been training to be a fighter.
No.
And I love Gal Gadot. I do. She's great as Wonder Woman, but I'm sorry. She just looks like a model. Like, she doesn't look like she could knock your head off at all. But I'm not taking a punch from Gina Carano, because Gina Carano will knock me out.
And there's this old school sexism in martial arts fighting, where if you're a girl and you're fighting, you have to do spinny kicks, because that's the only way that a girl could ever have enough power to knock out a man.
By the way,
that doesn't happen in this. I don't think I remember any one spinny kick in this entire TV show.
No, she clotheslines the living tar out of the Mandalorian and nearly breaks him in half. And it's my favorite moment in that fight.
Getting back to your point about Gal Gadot. Gal Gadot is statuesque, but she is not an Amazon. And it's been I really do like her performance. But to me, I really have always wanted to see a Wonder Woman that actually looks like an Amazon. I want her to look like Zap from American Gladiators.
Absolutely.
You know, I want that kind of a body, and Gina would be awesome, I think.
So I can't take credit for this, but a friend of mine messaged me the other day and was like, hey, you know who, if, you know, they've been remaking a lot of stuff from the 90s. You know, if they remade Xena, you know who I'd want Xena as?
Oh yeah.
And I was like, who? And they said Gina Carano.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was like, you are absolutely correct.
If you want to know what Wonder Woman should look like, there's a little known comic artist by the name of Stefan Sejic who draws Wonder Woman the way she should look.
You may be aware of this comic artist because he did the recent Harleen Quinzel run.
He did the recent series Harleen, which is the origin story. Absolutely amazing. Super, super cool. Also did this little known comic called Sunstone.
That's not PG-13.
Don't read it with your kids.
If you are kids watching this, don't let your parents know you're going to read Sunstone.
For the artist, though, it's really, he's a success story because he was a deviant artist. And he made it big on...
We don't mean anything weird. We mean he was on the website DeviantArt.
It still exists.
Yes, it still exists. But he started out on DeviantArt. So DeviantArt is a website for artists, and he started on this website, and that's where he started with his popularity, and then he was able to start printing and publishing. And did he start with a Witchblade? Was that his first named...
He ended up doing Witchblade for Image for a long time. Yeah. He did a series of Aquaman. He did Harleen. he would do these little fan art on DeviantArt of DC comic characters, and did them so well that DC reached out. In the world of adult comics, he's drawn a series called Sunstone, which has gone on for a long, long time now, and it is probably one of the most beautiful, loving, adorable stories ever written, done with a very adult twist. Don't let your kids read it.
Yeah, not PG-13.
Not PG-13, but my gosh, is it a great comic book. I have as many issues as I can buy on my shelf because they're amazing.
To be fair, I would not call it... You can tell the Canadians in the chat. Yep. I would not call it smut, just adult.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So just before we bounce into the spoiler section, because we've been talking for almost 50 minutes, spoiler free, by the way, I do want to say that they did an amazing job with casting. Oh, they yeah. have a star-studded cast. But before we get in there, when we finished the first couple episodes and Tech and I said, gosh, this really feels like Star Wars. This is so good, much better than the JJ stuff. And then we saw who created, wrote, directed, and it's Jon Favreau, which is the reason why Iron Man is so good, which is, you know, when you get a real fan that actually knows what they're doing, and then, you know, other episodes are written by other people.
I want to do Star Wars, so I'm going to ruin Star Trek to prove to everyone that I can make it profitable, so they'll let me do Star Wars, and then I'll ruin that for 3 movies. But let me take my gold-plated rocket car over to my floating mansion, because I don't care anymore, because, nah. JJ, you have no friends on this podcast.
He only ruined 2 of the 3. The second one was all Ryan Johnson.
JJ has come to the understanding that setups make money, but payoffs don't.
Agreed. 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 100% agreed. You know, but I really like what Jon Favreau did with everything. And I think because of who he is, there's a lot of really great cast in here. You know, we talked about Werner Herzog already, but I mean, number one, can we just talk about the fact that Pedro Pascal is playing the Mandalorian and he doesn't take his helmet off, and that boy is so beautiful?
Can we talk about them putting delicious people of color in masks? I mean, I'm looking at you, Black Panther. Look at you, the Mandalorian. Like, it was just...
Hey, but it's not just people of color. I mean, what about Tom Hardy? That boy can't act without a mask.
Yeah, but that's his own personal failing.
Although, to be fair, Tom Hardy did act without a mask. He played a tiny, shriveled version of Picard in this movie back years ago.
No, we don't mention that. That didn't happen. That wasn't real.
And this is more proof is that he can't act if he doesn't have a mask on.
Nemesis doesn't exist. That's a fan project.
We're not 100 pounds of muscle. It's fine. But no, man, like...
Even in the movie that didn't have masks in it, even when they got Tom Hardy to be in Dunkirk, what did they do? They put him in a Spitfire, and as soon as this scene starts, let me put my mask on. You're like, oh, God, now I can act like this for the rest of the movie. No one knows who I am. Coming at you, Red Leader. Yeah.
But now I want to say that I think this is a risk for them to cast Pedro Pascal, because he had been in stuff, but he was never the main dude.
I don't think. Like, he was up and coming.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, he wasn't a Denzel Washington movie. Looking at you, Equalizer 2, the only sequel Denzel has ever done.
So for anyone going, I know that name. Who is Pedro Pascal? Most well known as the Viper, the Dornish character from Game of Thrones that sadly goes out like a chomp against the mountain.
He was in The Kingsman.
Yeah, he was in a bunch of stuff.
He's
very pretty. We got Carl Weathers. We've got Gina Carano, which we talked about.
Carl Weathers, which when he came across my screen, I'm like, isn't that the guy from Airwolf?
Yes, it is. we've got Nick Nolte, which, you know, it's not him. It's him doing the voice, but it really kind of looks like him.
When was the last time we heard Nick Nolte?
I don't care.
So the two observations about Nick Nolte is, one, why is he an Ugnaught without tusks? Why do we never get a mention of where his tusks went?
I want a whole backstory on that
and,
character.
And two,
that could be a short.
You're going to need to edit this out because I'm blanking for a second.
Can I swear now?
No.
go ahead just so she has to edit.
burrito.
I hate you all.
What's the name of the guy that looks like Nick Nolte but isn't? He's just him.
Gary Busey.
Gary Busey. Does this mean that we can get Gary Busey on as like the mirror universe or like his evil twin brother Ugnaught and have like a fight between the two of them? Because that would be awesome.
We've got Taika Waititi as IG-11.
Taika Waititi. He's
Waititi. I never say his name right. I apologize. I love you.
So. Does he just do everything now? Like
yes.
Yes.
He is royalty now.
He does voices. Like he has like next thing you know, he's gonna be like, you know what? I'm gonna produce a thing. I'm gonna foot up this money. Like he's just Taika Waititi's in everything at this point. Like he's gonna be in the reimagining of Hamilton, I guess.
Taika Waititi is at the point where when I first saw the ads, I still haven't seen it, but when I first saw the ads for Jojo Rabbit, I was like, oh, hell no. You cannot, no. We cannot put out a movie like this now. And then I saw who made it and I was like, wait, okay, actually, let me take a think about this.
Looks really funny, but it breaches my number one rule of movies. The title is stupid, therefore I'm not watching the movie.
Well, I'm going to watch it anyway. Fine. I don't agree with your rule. If I agreed with your rule, I'd miss out on so many good movies.
Name one movie with a bad title that you watch that I won't.
Well, I can, off the top of my head, I know Buffy is one of them.
I watched the movie. Oh,
okay.
It had a great death scene.
It did.
You guys watch Jojo Rabbit, you need to watch Parasite.
Yeah, we'll get to that. Not right now, though. Not right now. No, like, super serious movies right now.
Oh, so good.
All right.
No, But with The Mandalorian and Taika Waititi and Pedro Pascal, like,
see, he can do the name better than me.
But no, like, also among them is a actual physical actress for the Ugnaught character. Her name is
Misty Rosas.
Missy Rosas, and she is phenomenal. She's wonderful. Because I'm like, you're not getting it. You're not dolling this guy up.
I have a theory about Nick Nolte. I think he really didn't care about this part that much, and that's just the way he normally talks.
I have spoken.
I have spoken.
I want extra guac on that burrito. Oh, it's a dollar more. I want extra guac, and you will not charge me. I have spoken.
I will work for nothing less than scale plus two. But that's not what we... I have spoken.
Him at the negotiation table. And they're like, I think we can do something with this.
Yeah. Just do you, man. Just do you.
Just
do... Oh gosh.
But so no, like, go ahead.
You know, it's the cast. I mean, just, and not to mention, by the way, the bartender in the first episode, he's a known actor. He's a known character actor, and I can't think of his name to save my life, but he's somebody. I mean, later on in the show, you get Clancy Brown, who is the man. You got Bill Burr. I mean,
Bill Burr is so fun. And Richard, say his last name for me.
Ayoade.
Yeah. Again,
yeah.
Moss himself from the IT Crowd.
Yeah.
Again, more people of color either being voices or under masks.
It's like, why? Oh, like, why does this droid sound like Moss from the IT Crowd? Oh, it's because it is.
Oh, the bartender Ginger showed me is John Beasley. And I mean, he's been in so much stuff. He's had a long, long acting career. And
where do we know him from?
Well, it's black people in masks or droids, unless you're Clancy Brown, and then you're just.
Then you're a white devil. Then you're a white devil.
Then you're just like the Mac Daddy himself. And you know what he proves yet again? If you're a person of color and you're in Star Wars, you get a cape and you get to rock it.
Seriously, though, I just caught that as we were sitting here. You're just like, Clancy Brown, you're just a... And I realized that he played he's a white man playing a devil. Like, he's literally a white devil in this show, and it's amazing. He is. He literally is.
Yep.
And he also likes to throw droids, which is amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
So, but I do want to mention, like, we get at the very end, I'm not going to say who he is, but we get Giancarlo Esposito from Homicide: Life on the Street, and he is killing it.
Do we get to talk about the thing that he has, or later in spoilers?
Is it time to drop the spoiler warning?
That's where we're headed. We're headed to the
Brand
the spoiler right. wall.
Not Clancy Brown. I'm sorry, I got the wrong name. The pimp boss in the cape. Yeah, Giancarlo Esposito.
Yeah.
Can we talk about how bad
Taco
he is for a while?
You mean bad Taco?
Taco.
Edits. No. It all depends on what it's referenced. No! Well, now you gotta blur out the Twitch chat because you did the gestures.
I marked this as mature content.
No. It's follow the rules of radio, follow the rules. If
yeah,
you
it was
talk-
all angry. I have to edit it when we were the one that was gonna be swearing, but as soon as I forgot. You know, I forgot how corrupting the power was to be the one behind the control board.
I'm sorry. Did I swear on your podcast or your radio show?
If you didn't, I wasn't doing my job right.
Giancarlo Esposito is, and we're not putting his character name, is amazing. And he gets a cape and he gets awesomeness and all of that. Is there anything else you wanted to add to that before we drop this spoiler wall?
I do.
What?
The two brown people get cape coats.
Yes.
Him and Billy D.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. If you're a person of color and you're in Star Wars, you get a cape and you get to rock it and you get to make it look absolutely amazing.
Pedro also has a cape.
Yes, he does. And technically Sam Jackson has robes and a pimp saber. That's not a lightsaber. It's a pimp saber because it's purple.
Is there something really, really off color going on inside the Empire where they're basically tagging all these people for some reason? Is there something that we're not talking about? That's
It's not purple triangles in the Empire. It's a cape.
Oh man, that guy's be careful. That's a BAMF. He's got a cape on. Watch it.
It's a BAMF.
Watch it.
His midichlorian count is over 9,000. Give that guy a cape so we know who he is.
Don't make that guy mad.
It's not that they force them to wear a cape. They just hand a cape. And when you get a cape handed to you, you're just like, oh, well.
If it flutters on its own.
Hey, you know what? I mean, I know the character's not black, but he's played by a black person. Darth Vader had a cape.
Okay, not technically a cape. It's more part of his vest.
It's a duster. It's like a sleeveless duster.
But Grief Karga's duster looks a little cape-like too.
but you know, episode 6 proves the point. Inside every powerful black man is a pasty old white dude.
Stop it! Why do I have to? You're making me edit because it's awful. That is a quote from Chasing Amy.
Is that a quote from Chasing Amy?
Yes.
Okay, I just thought it was funny.
Chasing Amy's not bad. Not a bad show.
Chasing Amy is a really good movie.
It's a really good movie.
It's very underrated. All right. Now, we are going to drop the spoiler wall. FaZe, this is your warning. If you don't want to be spoiled, leave.
Shane
is gone.
Shane. Bye, Shane.
Shane left the chat.
Now, FaZe, there's a thing. Where if I have chicken, I can only spoil things. So I've been holding back this entire time because
do you have chicken?
I had a McDonald's chicken McGriddle, which they started making. I never knew they made these.
Chicken McGriddles.
Yes.
Wowzers. Yes.
That sounds good.
It's the fattest country in the world because we make things like
and
the
it
McGriddle.
Was free.
You got your Jen hook up there.
Thanks, Jen. Yeah. Now, remember, this is coming from America. The inventor of the double down.
I used to eat two of those. They're delicious.
Can I make a quick comment here? I mean, I've never seen your co-hosts on webcam before because I always listen to your podcast on my headphones. But Jen shakes her head a lot.
Yep,
she does.
I didn't realize that. It really does add a whole new layer to the podcast.
Sarcastic comment from Jason. Head shaking from Jen.
I don't get dirty looks anymore when I'm on video chat. Used to get a lot of dirty looks.
Oh, solidly so. I say this all the time. People don't come to the podcast for me. They come to the podcast to hear Jen correct me on the things that I say. That's what they show up for. It's fine.
I agree, FaZe. What were they made with this for?
Exactly. Yes. What were they made with before?
Chinese newspapers and apple cores.
And they were delicious.
Warning. Spoilers ahead. Warning. Spoilers ahead.
All right, so we have dropped the spoiler wall. We can now get into spoilers. FaZe has been warned, but he doesn't care. He's going to get spoiled.
Darksaber! Yes!
Yeah, so much for the whole canon about there only being three colors of lightsaber, and then, you know...
Well, once purple came out, it was
Then Mace Windu's like, I want two things. I want a really cool death scene. Okay, I can give you that. And I want a purple lightsaber. You can't get that. Then I'm not doing the movie. Fine, we'll give you a purple lightsaber. I guess now the gloves are off and we can just make lightsabers any color we want, including no color at all.
I
and
want that
was
to
the
know.
Moment they realized it was super easy to sell out.
I want to know where the black light crystal came from, because the color is based on the crystal, right?
Yes. Go ahead, Jen, before I get... I was
going to say, so if you have a color that's not the original, is that just your gray area? Like, it doesn't mean you're, like, technically neutral?
You're Jedi purgatory, yes.
Yeah.
Now, where does this... Does anybody know the answer? Where does this fit into the chronological timeline? Is this between 6 and 7?
It's between... Yes.
3 and 4, I thought.
I thought it was between the three new movies, the set of three, and the previous.
No. Yeah, you're right. 6 and 7. Sorry, I got the numbers. I was trying to deny the existence of 1, 2, and.
Yeah, so this is between 6 and 7, which is fine. They can still have any color lightsaber crystal they want because all of the crystals come from the planet that they, spoilers, explode in episode 7.
It is 5 years after the Battle of Endor.
Okay. So between 6 and 7.
I think they establish it actually in the bar scene in the first episode, just with some background talking or something, because they mentioned something about the fall of the Empire.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they also a couple times reference the New Republic, and they even say in the episode with Esposito that he should have been executed for war crimes, meaning that the war is over and, you know, he got away somehow.
Right, and they all thought that he was dead. It's like, oh, no, he's this old Imperial officer, and he's still around, and now he's in power again. And
yeah, and so...
And he found a cape.
Oh, so the Darksaber, right? The Darksaber is a black-bladed lightsaber, but it was crafted and made by a Mandalorian craftsmith who was the first Mandalorian to be inducted into the Jedi Order. That's why that thing is so important.
Wait, what? Where is that coming from?
Because, okay, so in the original universe of the Star Wars, the Mandalorians were thought to be non-force sensitive.
Yeah,
they were a race, not a way, right? Like, they changed that with the Mandalorian. It used to be a race of people that would not bend to the Empire's invasion, so they were nearly wiped out. And there was only one, or the first to be indoctrinated into the Jedi to be force sensitive, was the one who created the Darksaber, because the Mandalorians are known for their blacksmithing and weapon craft, And that thing has been through, it's old. It's super old. It's ancient. It's been through many different hands. It's been from the light side to the dark side. It's been to non.
So you're saying that this is from the old extended universe?
Yes. This is a huge nod to the fans of Star Wars. Like,
All right.
Yeah, people who were deep, deep, deep into the books and stuff like that and the lore of Star Wars, they saw that thing and probably creamed their jeans. And it was an awesome moment to see, because I was like, is that what I think it is? Like, no, they wouldn't. No.
And The Mandalorian is full of nods to the fans.
Oh, there's
really
so many
deep-seated facts, too.
Yes. It's so good. At first I was a little upset that they changed the fact that the Mandalorians were a race to a way of life, but I like that they changed that and it fit in with the origin story of not only the Mandalorian himself, but also Baby Yoda. Yeah.
I always kind of thought that change was, it's not like a retroactive change, it's more of they were once a race, but as a people they've been destroyed and scattered, and now their creed lives on and they adopt people into their creed, so now they've become more of a way of life than they were, because there was a planet called Mandalore at one point.
Right.
I don't know if it's still around or not. I know it was in the Old Republic video games, it was there, and I think we visited it at one point, but I always just assumed that it was more of a phase out and into a creed that it is now.
So I'm going to agree with Kaylin in the chat here. That's how I thought of it, a race that evolved to a creed, and I agree 100%.
Did anybody pick up on the fact in the first episode there was the mention of Life Day?
Yes.
I loved that little nod to the Christmas special. I love it. Because wait for it, that makes Chewbacca having a wife and kids canon.
It does.
Well, there wasn't only that. There was the Mandalorian's weapon, the forked weapon, I think only made an appearance before now in the cartoon on the Christmas special.
Man, that thing is wonderful. Can we just... Oh, and I love that it has variable degrees of... Like, it can be a stun prod or it can disintegrate you. And it's amazing.
It does short work of... what are they called? Jawas?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
By the way, that's one of my favorite lines. They are... You can trade for it, but those are my parts. They stole them from me.
I love that Jawas are everywhere. Like, there's multiple planets that there are Jawas just stealing stuff willy-nilly.
Can we just say, George Lucas, if you're listening to this, which you aren't, but it's fine. No one is racist in this show. None of these aliens speak with accents or sound like they're some sort of ethnic group.
They made fun of Gungans.
They did. Yeah, they did. In my favorite episode, with Clancy Brown as the devil alien, they ask, is like, can we see your face, Mandalorian? And he's like, or they ask the Twi'lek if she's ever seen his face, if he ever takes it off. And she's like, a lady never tells her secrets. And he goes, I know why you don't want to take it off. You're a Gungan under there.
So apparently in the first episode, when the bounty is looking through the carbonite bounties, one of them is George Lucas.
Yeah, that's funny.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Again, nod to the fans.
I thought it was a little strange that he had a carbonite freezer in his ship at this point in the story. Because it seemed to me like in the movies, you know, the carbonite freezing process, first of all, it wasn't really meant for people. They kind of jury-rigged it so that they could put Han on carbonite.
Well, it was part of it was part of the cloud mining facility
for
whatever gas they were mining. It wasn't meant
Boba's like, I need him alive if this kills him, and they tested it on Han. It wasn't, like you said, it wasn't standard.
Yeah, maybe after Han, they rebranded, that mining station rebranded, and now they make a new series of carbonite freezers for people, and they've managed to get the technology nice and small, and they're selling it to bounty hunters or something like that. I don't know. You could do whatever headcanon you want, but it just seemed very strange to me.
And Boba should have won a Nobel Prize, but for some reason they've never been able to find him or found out what happened to him.
He died like a chump.
Wow, man, for such an amazing warrior, I hope he didn't go down like a chump.
No.
So, you know, so I, when I saw that, I looked at it as the technology having progressed a little bit, because I feel like when the Empire was in control, they would limit how people use the technology. But after their defeat, and this is some years after that, maybe some of the things that were held in check are like, hey, no, we got this. We could do this cool stuff. And so, you know, desperation leads to ingenuity in some cases. And I feel like trying to make a living out in the backwaters of the Black, you know, you find a way to keep your bounties still. AKA, I'm going to put you in a giant block of, you know.
I mean, it's definitely, it makes it a lot more efficient. You know, you can have a stack of bounties that you bring in all at once instead of running
like
back.
Like literally a stack, like a Jenga block of bounties.
You could like deal them out like, with like a deck of cards.
I'll give you 3 smugglers and a spice runner.
By the way, I also like the fact that this, outside of a few moments, has nothing to do with the Jedi. Like, this is basically everyday life in the Star Wars universe for people who are not space wizards.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that's going to go away in the second season a little bit. I think we're going to lose our independence from the main storyline just a little bit. Now, the other thing that kind of troubles going forward is, you know, in the next 3 movies or in the next series of Star Wars, there's never any mention of a Yoda-like creature ever again.
I think the only other one we see is the female Yoda, but she's only seen in the prequels. They don't actually name her by name. And I want to say maybe in one of the books or in one of the alternate series, like the Clone Wars or something like that. But she's the only other Yoda that we've seen. And people theorize that that was actual Yoda's mate.
Well,
but that was never confirmed.
Well, the thing about the next couple of movies, the next trilogy, is that it's going to take place at least 1,000 years in the past, because it's been confirmed that the next movie trilogy is going to be Knights of the Old Republic.
Why do they have to go and ruin the era in Star Wars that I love?
Well, I don't know if they're going to ruin it. The thing is that the next movies were supposed to go to Benioff and Weiss, but they did such a train wreck job of season 8 of Game of Thrones that Disney said, no, you can't touch Star Wars.
Good.
So they took them away. It took them away from the project.
They would have added so many rape scenes.
Ironically enough, I think they sped up and ruined the last season of Game of Thrones just so they could get on to the Star Wars contract, which they then didn't get because they rushed the last
season. Yeah.
Of Game of Thrones.
I mean, one, Knights of the Old Republic is, if you combine the video games and the online game, there's more than enough content there to make an amazing series of movies. I mean, you could do the whole stories of, oh, we're in the spoiler territory, right?
Yeah.
Darth Revan. You could do the whole story of Revan and make an amazing series of movies, but this will give me something that I have been waiting for in movies for a long, 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 long time. We got KS-01, we got IG-11, we got IG-88, but I still haven't gotten HK-47. And I need to see HK-47 in a movie because I am just a meatbag. And to the three people listening who get this, you know that he is the best character in all of Knights of the Old Republic.
So, Mark, I never watched Game of Thrones. I watched the last season because my friend Raven used to watch it with her friends, and they moved.
Horrible jumping in point!
They moved away, and so I said, "Fine, I'll watch this with you and go through this whole process with you." She was on like episode 3, so I binge watched them and caught up with her and watched it, and that was exactly my thought. It felt so rushed and so anticlimactic. Like, I feel like if you build up to some things, give a little bit. You know what I'm saying? People want a little bit of, you know, foreplay. They want a little bit of, you know.
And this is why you should read the books, because, like, the books is all foreplay.
George R. R. Martin can do 4 chapters on the spread of a table, and you're like, oh, I want to eat that.
Yeah.
This isn't even like, you know, foreplay, and then you're just not good in the end. This is like foreplay, and then you get yourself off and leave the room, and the other one's like, what the hell?
Wow, that was not PG-13, but accurate.
And so when you talk about these Old Republic stuff, I'm going to say this because I know Jen has read these too, but my favorite character from the Old Republic is probably the last bit that will lead into the stuff that we know with Palpatine and all that good stuff, and that's Darth Bane. Darth Bane is the character who created the body jumping technique that Palpatine is hinted at using in this new trilogy. Spoiler alert. That's why he's still alive, folks. Get over it. And those were great. Like, those were absolutely great books. And we read them and loved them. And I've been waiting to see this. And I just hope it's done well. And in my headcanon, you know, the guy who played the Incredible Hulk, not Incredible Hulk, but the Thing in the Fantastic Four movie, the first one.
Michael Chiklis? The Commish?
Yeah.
The Commish.
I want him to be Bane because Bane is supposed to be a short, stocky miner. And
okay. Okay. I'm good with that.
Good Bane. That guy's solid.
Yeah, he literally would be Darth Bane, and cover him in crustaceans and make him a Sith Lord with an adopted kid, and it's I'm winning. Yeah. You're winning. But yeah, it's like just I don't know, man. The Mandalorian, it's not perfect. It's not.
No, but the thing is that I rail on the stuff I love, and anybody who listens to this podcast and any of my friends know that the stuff I love is the harder I rail against it, yeah. And I nitpick at every little fault. I can't think of much that I want to rail against The Mandalorian, other than that one scene where they're like, oh, well, all the bad guys are inside this building. All the stormtroopers are on the outside of the building. We want to go inside. I guess we should just stand outside in 4 perfect ranks and just wait.
Does anybody hear the sound of a crashing land speeder? No. What? Oh, God, it's a crashing land speeder. Just.
But I think that I'm not too upset about that because they give us, and now that we're in the spoiler territory, we can talk about it. They give us conversations between stormtroopers and scout troopers. These scouts. Oh, my God. The scouts.
Or, I know how to get them out of the building. Send in the flame trooper. Oh, awesome. The flame trooper. He's so cool. The red stripe on the helmet and the big flame pack. So great. Let's send the guy that's actually a giant walking bomb alone into a building with no cover and no suppression. He could have just, he could have just leaned up to the building and, like, put it in the window and just torch the bunker like you're supposed to do. But no, what did he do? Kicked the door in, walked in, silhouetted himself in the door. Dramatic pause. What's gonna happen? Oh, no, I've been shot. Oh, all these horrible things are happening to me. Oh, what a world.
Hey, to be fair, he was not shot. It was Baby Yoda that handled that man. He didn't know there was gonna be a Force-sensitive frog-eating kid in there.
Oh, my God, Baby Yoda eating the frog. How awesome was that?
Snack.
Oh, by the way, Carl Weathers has the best line. I think it's a carnivore.
but Kalen is right. Like that entire scene of the flame trooper and everything being classic Star Wars is why I'm not mad.
Yeah.
No, does it make actual tactical military sense? No. Does it make sense in the world of Star Wars? Yes, 100%. The stormtroopers are arrogant. They're just like those guys from Eric the Viking that have the helmets on, that they're used to everybody running away from them, so they don't actually know anything about battle. The thing about the stormtroopers is that they're so gosh darn good, they don't actually need to be good. They're good by reputation. Their armor is strong enough, and their fear factor, their reputation is good enough. They don't actually need to be good, so they've kind of lapsed just a bit. And
sure thought. I just got something I want.
No, that was it, Mark. Go ahead.
I found that the Mandalorian, I kind of feel a little bit differently about this. I found that the Mandalorian actually gave us a bit of an explanation for all that. They gave us that little bit of a peer behind the veil that we've never really seen before. And I know it was more of a comedy bit, but when they had those the two scout troopers kind of stop on their bikes and try to shoot the can and make the comments about command and all the stuff like that. They didn't say it directly, but they basically heavily implied that there's a few things going on with the Empire. And that's one, they don't give
potato
about their foot soldiers at all. And matter of fact, to them, foot soldiers are so cheap and so plentiful that if there's something stuck in the pipe, you just send more soldiers in and you keep cramming it until it clears itself up. And they don't care about giving them accurate weapons. Why give them accurate weapons? You could cheap out, make a whole lot of weapons, equip a whole lot of soldiers, have more pew-pews, which means there's a greater chance of you actually hitting something.
I could make a really, really good gun. Or I could make 38 guns.
Yeah. Exactly. They don't care about the soldiers at all. They could just send so many in, and that's why they don't mind. You know, rank and file, you always stand, and you make yourself look really good, rank and file, even if you're completely exposed to the enemy, and you should be hunkering down. No, make yourselves look pretty, square off, and stand in a line.
Kalen says that entire scene was classic Star Wars. I know I read that. Every reasonable soldier would have never have done any of that. So, of course, that's what they did. They win all over the galaxy against villagers, peasants, and poor people.
Yeah, why fight a stand-up army?
Yeah, exactly.
Who would do that? That sounds like a fair fight.
I
also,
love...
They cheaped out on training, right? They wouldn't have trained any of their soldiers beyond giving how to put on a helmet and how to duck when a door is coming down. Maybe.
And that was a really good reference. And we learn from the new movies that, especially, you know, Force Awakens, that what they do spend time on is indoctrination. When Finn goes, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying you're psychic because that's literally what I was going to talk about was Finn.
Yeah. When Finn goes back and meets up with Captain Phasma, it's okay. This one needs re-education. And that's all they focus on. Why do the two scouts sit there and go, yeah, he just force choked someone. All right. We're going to be here a while instead of like, oh man, that sucks. No, they're used to it, and yet they still do it. You know, oh, he's making a big long speech. All right, we're going to be here a while. Get comfortable. You know, and as Faye says, send in the clones.
Yeah, and, you know, like you said, they would rather spend time on taking small children and indoctrinating them so that when you say jump, they go, they don't even ask how high, they just jump until they get it right.
Yeah.
And that's why also there's a washout, and Finn is a washout of that. And yeah. I love that about his character. It's not explored very well, and we're not going to talk about that trash.
Mm.
But one of the things I will say about this is probably the most epic we've seen Stormtroopers, because there is one unit in the Star Wars universe that is well known, and that is the 501st. And I bring that up because I was a member of the 501st at one point in the real United States military. But anyway, but we actually get to see Stormtroopers be BAMFs. Like the black suited Stormtroopers, the fire trooper, seeing the white suited Stormtroopers come out from the, you know, the troop transport and file
I
up.
I love
it. Awesome.
I love how, like, the guard stormtroopers, how dirty their armor is.
The weathering that they did to make them look, worn in was really well done.
Speaking of the 501st, for some of those scenes that they needed a lot of stormtroopers, a lot of them are 501st stormtroopers.
Awesome.
Yeah. Okay. I've also heard that they got help from some Mando guilds as well.
Right. Same thing that they did in 7, 8, and 9,
yeah.
That there's a lot of the Mando guilds that were involved in making some of those scenes, and they even hung a Mythosaur banner outside of the bar as a nod to the Mandos that helped make this possible. So the fact that they're finally thanking the fans and finally realizing what Star Trek realized in the 70s, that your franchise is being supported on the backs of your fans, and that, you know, it's our love for your product that makes it happen. And the fact that, you know, George Lucas has proven again and again that he doesn't care about us or what we think or what we want, but somebody like Jon Favreau can come forward and do a project like Mandalorian, which is from a fan that loves the series to other fans that love the series. If this is this is nothing more than a giant love note to Star Wars, I love this. There's very little that I can talk bad about because it's just so bloody well done. And I want to watch more, and I want to grow old watching this, and I want to get to the point where they're at like season seven or eight. I want to get to the point where at season 7 or 8, I'm like, can you just finish it already? I'm getting almost sick of this guy.
And in that season, that's when the Mando goes back to that planet and hooks up with that pretty lady with the two kids who shoots a real good gun, and that's the end of the series.
Yeah,
how many people wanted them? Like, I want to know more about her, because he's like, does anyone know how to shoot? And she's like, me.
And then she handles that thing.
What's her story? What's her background? I want to know more. I really do.
We talked about the Stormtroopers. We talked about the Empire. Let's talk about this elephant in the room, Mr. Mandalorian himself. He and the Mandalorians too, but he's awesome. Like, and one of the things that I was hoping this would not happen, and it didn't, was to make him a Mary Sue, if you will. This thing that you can put in, you can just plug and play, and he would exist in this thing. He has personality. He has flaws, one of which is why he hates droids. And but also, he improvises. I love the banter between him and IG-11. When IG-11's like, oh, manufacturer says I can't be caught. Got to self-destruct. He's like, no self-destruct. Calm down, bro. And I love that he, for all it's worth, he's not necessarily a good fighter. He is a good fighter, but some of the stuff that he does is allowed by the steel armor that he has.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, if he didn't have that Beskar armor, he'd have been dead a couple of times in this series.
Like, he just tanks charges like a boss and jumps on a giant gun and shoots everyone. By the way, that's
he gets those little sew things, whatever they're called. I forgot already. They have not a cool name.
Not the wasps. The
will-o-wisps.
No.
The whispering birds.
Whispering birds? Is that what it's called?
No, that's not what it's called.
Somebody's yelling at us while they're listening to this. I apologize.
Whistling Birds.
Whistling Birds. Yeah. Use them sparingly. He uses them up right away.
No, he uses them, and he uses them twice in the whole show.
Yeah.
And the second time, they don't work.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
Because he's fighting Clancy Brown, the White Devil.
The White Devil.
Did we lose Kebbit?
I'm back now.
Okay.
But I don't know if my camera feed is...
No, the camera's not there. I think your 20-year-old webcam just bit the dust.
No!
It has spoken.
It has spoken.
It is the way.
Oh, do we have something? There we go.
There he goes.
Wait, how...
Okay, but for some reason, you're the only thing in focus now. The whole background looks like it's a set piece.
That's okay.
You look like you're green screened.
And sadly, Twitch, you can't see this because he's not on the feed.
Oh, he'll get there eventually.
I can't see my own feed.
There he is.
The whole background is blurred. You look like a green screen, man.
It's fine. It's fine. It works for Star Wars. There's so much editing.
He you can tell specifically with The Mandalorian and with episode 6, I want to say, is the episode where he has the run in with Bill Burr and those guys. And they're like, so, you know, we need your help, blah, 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 like old times. And they go to rescue the Twilight Lady's brother and all this other stuff. And you find out a little bit about the Mandalorian's history. And I like it because it shows you that not all the Mandalorians are these bad A bounty hunters. Sometimes they got to do some kind of illicit stuff to kind of get up there to doing the illustrious stuff. But I love the way that it pays off because he's a savage in that episode. He becomes Jason Voorhees at the end of the episode.
So what got me about that episode and what I really love is the fact that they didn't kill off those characters, because honestly,
they're too good to kill off.
Like, Bill Burr did a show called F for Family, which is one of the greatest cartoon shows ever put out. It is absolutely amazing. If
it's not for kids, it's for adults.
It's not for kids. His stand-up is definitely not for kids, and he can be known to be quite, like, crass and abrasive, and he's kind of hard to watch on a lot of results, on a lot of media, but... This, him as that character, oh my God, was he good.
He was really good.
I'd watch an entire show just about this guy and his crew. The little pop-out gun on his shoulder. All there is I really don't think that having a set of pistols so far up your chest that they impact your shoulders everywhere you go. Why couldn't you just draw from here like everybody else does? Why do you need them up here? How much better is the, it's better for when people steal them from you because it made that one scene better. But really, who's the set dresser that did, I'm going to start ranting about this show now, but who's the set dresser that made that costume? Maybe sometime in jail, and maybe by the time that prison ship makes it to where it's supposed to go, he'll have cooled his heels a bit and he'll realize that he needs to drop them holsters down by about 8 inches and then back into your armpits like where they're supposed to go.
See, when I first saw that, when he first came on screen and he had the two holsters up top, I thought maybe he had more holsters down below.
Oh,
yeah.
He's going to be the guy from Boondock Saints? He's going to be the guy from Boondock Saints? There was a firefight.
But he didn't, did he, Jen?
No. it was completely useless. And the whole fact that he has holsters here, and he's got an automatic gun coming out from right behind that shoulder.
Which how he,
that's going to impede it anyway. None of it made sense.
Remember when we saw the new Predator movie? Having a shoulder-mounted weapon and not being an alien named the Predator does not pay off. Because, spoiler alert, you shoot yourself in the head. Literally, in that new Predator movie, a character takes one of the Predator's shoulder cannons, uses human technology to take it over and has it on his shoulder, and turns to look, has it mounted to where it works with his head movement, turns his head, forgets that it's on his shoulder, and fires and blows his own head off.
Well, you'd think they'd put some sort of safety cutoff, but some sort of limiting switch. But I guess not.
I loved that episode specifically because it was just a band of really great characters. You wanted to hear more about Clancy Brown. And I'm sorry, when he starts throwing droids into droids, I mean, that was awesome.
Oh, when he tackles that hover Dalek?
Yeah.
Yes. I love how they were going to shoot it, and he just goes,
And Twi'lek Nymphadora Tonks was amazing. I mean, she moves like Gale, the bartender from Letterkenny, but I mean, she's so cool and it just works. And
hi, Wayne.
And I love the fact that they hint that her and the Mandalorian had a relationship. I like mm-hmm, that. And they do it.
No hint. They were saying yeah.
They did, which meant there was no kissing.
No. So do you think he left the helmet on? Yeah.
Of course.
There's a hatch. That's how that happened. There's a hatch.
For all my Destiny 2 fans, if you've not read the lore about the night that Shax spent with the Queen of the Awoken, read it. Because at the end, it says he read to her all night long and left the helmet on. It's my favorite lore bit.
There are so many great characters that show up, like, you know, Princess Caroline, the mechanic, in that one episode.
Oh, the mechanic with the pit droids.
Yes, yes. Oh,
by the way, that episode, that's my least favorite episode. It's only because of the rookie, but Ming-Na as the assassin, ugh.
Why? So wasted though. But we saw somebody walk up and I thought it was Mando walked up to her. So I was expecting her to show up in the next episode, but it wasn't. So now I'm thinking that it's Moff Gideon. Yeah. So I'm hoping we see Ming-Na in the next season, which by the way, I was
about that.
Hmm?
If you watch that scene,
yeah.
You can clearly hear that the person walking up to her has spurs on his boots.
Oh.
That's another Mandalorian?
Well, there's only one other Mandalorian or Mandalorian wannabe that has spurs on his boots that I know of. He was last seen in a pit.
In a Sarlacc pit?
Yeah. Now, that's kind of far-fetched, so I don't know if that carries any weight.
Now, I know that the actor that played the original Boba has gotten rather on in years, so I have a request to make of the Star Wars gods.
Mm.
If we get Boba, can he be voiced by Brecken Meyer? Who, if you guys don't know, Brecken Meyer was the guy that voiced Boba Fett in all of the Robot Chicken Star Wars.
He does
because,
a good job.
Because that became my Boba. Like that scene, that whole scene where they're aboard his ship, Slave One, and he's got Han frozen in carbonite and he's teasing it.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh yeah, your hands up, looking like you're begging. Look like you're begging for a little piece of Boba, aren't you, you dirty little smuggler?
When we watch the original movies, that just runs in my head.
That's my least favorite episode because I feel like out of every episode, the weakest acting comes from that guy who plays the rookie bounty hunter. Like, that's the weakest acting. He's the most annoying character. And so to see him bite it at the end, I'm not against that. Handle that, Mando. Deal with it.
Oh, you know what? You know what, Kay? Possibly. I'm looking at a...
Kalen does bring up a good point that Cad Bane from Clone Wars did wear spurs as well.
Wait. Here's a side view.
They're more like steel heels.
Yeah. And they are... And now, I will say this is tied into the Clone Wars because...
Pit droids? The
Darksaber was last seen in the hands of a character in that show.
By the way, the Lego figure for Cad Bane is really awesome.
Pretty good.
I don't know. I'm really, just like Kay, I'm really looking forward to seeing Ming-Na Wei in season two. I really hope that we get more. I love so many of the elements. I love how his mask is on almost the entire time and yet you're still getting emotion from just like little head tilts and stuff.
Oh, like when he first meets Baby Yoda and just gives you that Data head tilt? Like.
And you can feel his emotion?
Damn it.
There's a photograph of the entire crew of The Mandalorian, and they have all the actors and all the stage crew get together for this one photo. I think it was around Christmas time. And the only one, I don't know if it's necessarily him, but the Mandalorian actor still has his helmet on in the photo.
Yes.
And one of the comments that is made about the photo is like, this is the way.
This is the way. So it's not always Pedro Pascal in the suit. There were two other guys. One of the people that was in the suit more frequently, like in the first episode, Pedro's never in the suit.
Yeah, you can tell.
Yeah.
If you watch closely, the idiosyncrasy, like the mannerisms about that person, they change a little bit from episode to episode. I thought there was a distinctly feminine walk in one particular episode that I thought was a little out of place.
They tried to sync it up and do it as best, but one of the people inside the suit is Brendan Wayne, John Wayne's grandson.
If you didn't think The Mandalorian was a Western, it's got Western pedigree.
Mm. Oh, yeah, it does.
That's funny.
So I thought that was really interesting.
So, oh, God, guys, can we talk about her now? Let's talk about the blacksmith, the head of the Mandalorians, played by Emily Swallows, who was also in Supernatural for all of those.
Wait. Spoiler alert.
No, we're in spoiler territory. We don't need alerts.
No. Spoiler alert for Supernatural, because there are certain idiots that if they are listening to this, you need to skip ahead.
I didn't say who she was. I just said she's in the show.
Oh, okay.
She's in the
show. Well, I was going to allow you to talk about who she is. I just wanted to give a spoiler alert.
Okay. Yeah, she's in the show.
Is anyone still watching Supernatural other than the idiots?
Well, no, the show is over finally, but
they were
two more.
Yeah.
Last episode, I don't know if you guys seen it, but the last episode of Legends of Tomorrow had a really good jab at Supernatural, like an incredibly good jab at Supernatural.
They got to the final season, so they greenlit it for more.
No, they're still trying to record the last two episodes. They were put on hiatus because of the whole COVID-19 thing. But without giving out too much spoilers for Legends of Tomorrow, one of the episodes of Legends of Tomorrow, they actually arrive on the set of Supernatural and through their dealings kill the entire crew of Supernatural, and that is the explanation of why season 15 hasn't been completed yet.
That's awesome.
So Jay, we can't spoil it. Kaylin is not up to that season yet.
But no, so no
saying who she was in Supernatural.
But she's in Supernatural. She's awesome.
She's kind of a big deal.
I was gonna say, did they have to put her in a mask? Because I mean, she's kind of hot.
But is she hot?
Yeah, but so is Pedro Pascal. So
yeah,
It's like, I mean, but she's hot. But is she hotter with the mask on and carrying two hammers as she crushes the skulls of stormtroopers?
Oh, watching the fact that they added in when she hit that one dude in the mask, and not only did you watch the mask break, you saw his jawbone go.
And then she finishes that one on the floor, and you just see pieces of the helmet come up, and you're like, right?
Oh no!
And it's awesome. Like, also, I love that she also comes off as like that wizened, I've done this for a while type character, because she even tells Mando, she's like, you know, thank you, this steel, the extra of this steel will go to help, you know, sponsor foundlings. And he's like, well, I was a foundling myself. And she's like, I know. And it's really good. And the fact that that all these tough, rough and tumble dudes, or for all as we know, dudes, are led by this lady who shows that she is better than them all. Because she wielding hammers against guys with blasters, and she's like, bro, I'm going to handle you, son.
And as Kay says, she's even hotter crushing stormtroopers. And I agree 100%. That is my favorite scene of hers. The entire thing is her taking out those stormtroopers. That is amazing. Look, it has nothing to do with the looks. That is hot.
Typical trope of scantily clad women. When women wear armor, they always wear less. And if you had the Mandalorian woman without a helmet on, she would be the scantily clad Mandalorian.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Go ahead, Jason.
But no, there's a scene where he comes back with the rest of the steel that he got from the deal with Baby Yoda. And a guy questions him because that steel was stolen from the Mandalorians and imprinted with the Emperor's seal during the Great Fall and all that good stuff. And he says that he's a coward for working with them. And they get into it and they're about to fight. It's a great fight because they're using vibro blades, which is awesome. Yeah.
The fact that you saw them actually shake on film, that was so cool.
And she says, she then stops them and says, has anyone ever seen your face? And he says, or have you ever taken the helmet off? He says, no. She goes, has an enemy taken your helmet off? And he says, no. And then she looks at the other guy and says, well, then how can he be a coward if he has chosen the way of the Mandalorian? And And he goes, and, you know, and he kind of backs down, and she goes, no one shall see our face, blah, blah, blah. That is the way. They said, that is the way. And it's great because she doesn't even get up. She is working with this steel, minding her own, and handles these guys without even raising her voice or getting up.
Yep.
And that shows you the respect and the deference they show her as their leader. And it's great.
So can we talk about the idea of foundlings? And, you know, it's not a race, it's a creed. So to me, the entire arc of the show, we hear about the foundlings in the beginning. We find out that he was a foundling, and it goes through the whole thing. And then at the end, of course, Baby Yoda, I'm not calling him the child, it's Baby Yoda, is a foundling, you know, and he is a foundling. You, that is our way. You must take it as an apprentice or reunite it with its family. And until you can do it with its people, and until you can do so, you know, this is your charge. This is your mission. And to me, that is so powerful. And right from the beginning, when we find out that he's a foundling, we don't get the flashbacks, but we know how important that is to him. We know that the extra goes, this will go to help the foundlings. This is all his entire life. And so when we do get the flashback, we find out that person that saved him, that was his mentor. That was the person that took care of him.
But none of this is surprising.
No.
No, because in a military context, I don't care where you've been or where or who you are or who you were. I care about what you can be. And this whole thing about, oh, he's taking foundlings, they hit on this point, I think, to me a little too hard, because it's really not that surprising of a fact that with some training and with some discipline, you can make people do some pretty incredible things. And I'm not even going to bring up a military example. I'll just say sumo. The fact that you can take a scrawny 15-year-old and turn him into a 330-pound, 20% body fat, 40 championship-winning, greatest of all time, Yokozuna Hakuho. Hakuho, I am a fan. The fact that you can...
We've lost everybody.
The fact that you can make someone into something that they never were, into something incredible with discipline and training and mindfulness.
And
good soup. Yes, Chanko Nabe. The Mandos must make Chanko.
We saw that they're always giving Baby Yoda soup and bone broth, so yeah, of course.
Right, but... Also, because of the helmets, I want to see the Mando straw. I want to see the like twisty straw that goes under the helmet.
So
when you were the episode with that village and the lady asked if he wanted a cup of broth, I was like, please show him later with a bowl with a straw.
So we touched on it before about how, you know, stormtroopers are often, you know, taken as children. They're abused. They're indoctrinated, the whole thing. And so there is like this idea that Kaylin says soldiers will do anything for homemade food.
Yeah,
this is true.
We will.
So there is this idea that there's a lot of orphans in the supernatural, geez, in the Star Wars universe. There's a lot of orphans, and they could fall into something like the Empire's hands, where, you know, they're reprogrammed and abused and, you know, brainwashed and everything else. We could see that they end up like Rose in the sequel movies. And there's that whole side plot that we get a little taste of it there. Or they could be raised in this spiritual, militaristic lifestyle known as the Mandalorian Creed. So, yeah, exactly. Kaylin brought a unit Girl Scout cookies last week. They are mine now. 100% true.
Absolutely.
And you brought them not just those Girl Scout cookies, the ones with no extra filling or flavor, not just the shortbread ones. You got them Thin Mints and Samoas and the lemon ones. Yeah, yeah.
Bring them a batch of homemade soup. You'll never have to mow your lawn again.
I'm telling you, man. Look, you just... You know, it's like when I was in college, yes, and I would go home on the weekends and bring back homemade food. I was the king of the dorm because I made it smell like delicious. It's fun.
Yes, you bought the unit. Exactly.
You're going to train them to be your personal squadron of Girl Scout Mandalorians. Aggressive bitch ever.
Every flavor, 30 cases. That is a beautiful gift. Oh. Beautiful gift.
If I had a god that while I was deployed, I would have airdropped into the home of the person that sent them.
The last time I was overseas, there was a because I was one of the few guys in my unit that spoke and read English, I got to answer a lot of the letters that we were getting from people back home. And there was one woman that I had a kind of a back and forth conversation with for a while. She ended up sending me, she DVD'd every UFC fight that I missed since I was overseas, and sent them over to us so we would have stuff to watch. And then in the next care package, she sent me like 6 of these huge bags of either oatmeal raisin or chocolate chip cookies that I gave out to sort of everybody in the squadron I was with. And then the rest of them I used to bribe our allies, because the people that were next to me on the flight line were doing some, well, let's say things that annoyed me. But man, what a bag of oatmeal raisin cookies to the right squadron sergeant major will do. All of a sudden, those things don't happen no more.
If you were a cook, you wouldn't have that problem at all.
I am not a cook.
You slide a box of steaks to this person, slide a box of steaks to that person. You can get whatever you want.
Man, when they say an army marches on its stomach, no, marching is way too proud of a term. An army crawls on its stomach.
Slithers and begs.
Yep, absolutely.
So, what?
I'm sorry, the army is just a bunch of teenage boys.
Yes, it is.
Yep.
You're not wrong. What happens if you got a bunch of 13-year-olds together now and say, I'm going to teach you how to do a rear naked choke? How long do you think it would take them from trying it on one another once they learned it?
About 8 seconds. Yeah, exactly.
So what was everyone's favorite part of the whole series?
Ooh.
You know what? I'm going to say the one part that keeps standing out was when the AT-ST in episode 3 or 4 or something like that came online in the woods. The first thought in my head was they were never that imposing.
The glowing red eyes.
Yeah, when it came online and just kind of towered over them for the first time, like, holy
potato.
I would be scared.
But if you're just a town militia with a random assortment of hand weapons and some mud barricades, an AT-ST is very, very intimidating.
But it was just the way it was framed. Movies are just kind of this thing that shows up that is nothing more than a totem to be knocked down kind of thing, a symbol of the enemy to be knocked over. Whereas in this particular instance, it was done really well. It was played into. It was very imposing. It was a physical thing.
It wasn't that claymation thing.
If an army of little bears from the forest moon of Endor can knock one down, why can't you, shrimp harvesting village?
Tech, what's your favorite part?
I can't think of the name of the character. The other mercenary, the shock trooper. The wrestler, the fighter.
Yeah, Kara.
That is Kara Dune, played by Gina Carano.
Right, Kara. There's a scene where she gets up close quarters and fights a guy. She grabs him and hip tosses him onto the ground. And when he lands on his back, she's still holding onto his arm. And she walks over his back, flipping him over onto his stomach, and then transitions immediately into a shoulder lock and breaks his arm. In this wonderful transition that proves the point that you can put wrestling into a TV show and it works. You don't have to ignore wrestling arts, people. It's not just spinny kicks and back fists in close quarter combat. The fact that they showed actual wrestling and, you know, actual Aikido, because that was a hip throw into Nika Joe number 1 and just snap. But it was just a simple, fast, quick thing of actual effective martial arts that was put into a movie, and they made it look good enough that it would survive on film. Because everybody says, all the directors say, well, you can't put real martial arts into a movie. It looks boring and it'll never survive film. No, it will. You just have to know how to shoot it.
See, I don't believe that it would be boring on screen. I just feel like it would be too quick. You know, because real fights don't last 8 minutes and all this fanfare. No, it's 32 nanoseconds because one person knows what to do and the other person doesn't, and it's instant reaction.
Like, we can talk about what real fighting looks like on film, and I'm sure we could do about 1,000 episodes on this, but I'll just say Bourne Identity.
Oh, my God. That's a great scene. That movie franchise has my two favorite fights.
Yep.
I think it's the second movie where that guy comes through the window and he knife fights the assassin. Oh.
So, Jen, what's your favorite scene?
So, I'm going to have to pull the cutesy moment. My favorite scene was Baby Yoda with the frog.
I knew it!
Snacks.
That was so good.
I knew it! I also did like how right after we'd seen the Mandalorian get his first bounty, and he was like, I can take you in cold or warm or cold. And like in the next scene, he's like, but what are they gonna do with the kid? You know, like the whole like heartfelt part after he seemed like such a non-emotional person, you know, and then you're just like, oh, heartbreak. Okay. And then snacks.
Jason, what's your favorite scene?
I kind of have two. One of them is with Cara Dune when she fights the Mandalorian in the bar. And that ends with Baby Yoda watching on with his cup of bone broth. The most mean thing ever. But in that fight, you see that, again, like Tech says, this is realistic fighting. They don't allow each other to separate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hold on to one another because you want to keep your target immobile. And they're uppercutting and body punching and just going at one another. And she clotheslines the tar out of him and nearly folds him over by doing so, and he gets up, and like it's a really good fight. The other thing is with the introduction of the crew in episode 6, where it's the Clancy Brown devil alien and looks at Mandalorian and goes, Mandalorian, huh? Thought he'd be bigger. And he walks up to him and looks down at him and goes, huh, like a little mouse. And from that point on, he refers to him as a mouse for the rest of the episode.
I love the way that hanger looks. That hanger looked so good. It just looks so good. So Kaylin in the chat said the nanny bot sacrifice. And I agree. That got me. Right,
you know,
there.
He talks about how he reprogrammed it and dealt this stuff. But as we've seen from the introduction of that robot, it just wanted to blow up. It just give it a reason.
Yeah. No.
It's totally from Hitchhiker's Guide with, what is it, Martin?
Oh,
Marvin.
Good pull. Yeah.
So that's one of the, that's another thing I have to talk about this show that I thought was really cool with their design of IG-11 is that one of my big rails against the whole Star Wars franchise is that everybody fights the same. Everybody holds a blaster the same. Everybody holds a sword the same. And that even when you get a character like Count Dooku that has a different sized saber handle like everybody else, and he holds it different than everybody else, and you think you're going to get a French saberist or a French saber fighter who's going to do something completely different with his saber, but he does the same twirly-doos that everybody else does, and that you get no difference whatsoever.
He tries. There's a couple.
No.
No.
There's a couple.
But you get a character like IG-11, because IG-88, as great as he was in episode 5, he did nothing. He stood there in that one scene with Bosk, Denga, Boba Fett, all the rest.
Dengar.
But that the reason I know those names is the reason why, and a massive shout out to my friend Tom. I know he's listening, but my friend Tom would say that was the day that he knew we could work together, and the day we were friends was the day that I ratted off the name of all those bounty hunters that are in that scene. And about no disintegrations. Sorry, I didn't mean no disintegration. Aw. But the fact that his eyes swivel on multiple levels and that he can use his eyes to track his two arms and that his shoulders are hypermobile and he can rotate his torso 360 degrees because he's a droid and that he can do all of these things that humans can't, but he still moves like a droid in the Star Wars universe.
Have you seen the movie Equilibrium starring Christian Bale?
Yeah, the guns that have like cross-shaped muzzle flashes.
Yeah,
and I really, really, really want to watch that movie. I really, really, really want to like Gun Fu. I really want to watch the sequel, but I can't get more than a third way in and fall asleep.
Okay, so, can I finish what I was saying?
Yes, please.
Thank you. So I'm agreeing with Caitlin because the sacrifice gets me right there. You can see how upset Mando is about it. It really does that whole arc. And I love the whole, like, he is programmed to kill, but he is through and through a nanny. I mean, if you didn't get Strax vibes from Doctor Who over that, you haven't watched any Strax Doctor Who. So, but I mean, it's totally, you know, the nurse potato. And I loved it so much. And I was sad. I was definitely weepy. But since Kaylin said that, and stole that from me, I'm going to go with the two scout troopers, chatting off the bike. And, I was very angry when he kept hitting the baby, but,
shut up.
He got it. But IG-88 took care of that. Yes. Every character, IG-11, sorry. Every character can be saved. Yes. And
sadly, that fed into a trope where a character has to show that they're a villain. Like, if they had just shown that those two troopers were complaining and being comical, their murder wouldn't have been so satisfying.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think that, like, it was full on tropish, though. I think it was just.
Do you think it's hungry? It's like, you just want to take a look at it. Well, no, but I mean, it's been a while since you fed it, and you just did hit the thing pretty hard. I mean, yeah. I wonder if it's thirsty. I'm not going to show it to you.
Yeah. But yeah, I agree. Every character can be saved if we give enough time. Except Alfie Allen's character in John Wick movies. He can't be saved. He was an awful, awful, awful thing.
Alfie Allen was in John Wick.
Yeah.
Wait, who was he in John Wick?
No.
Yeah, the Keanu Reeves movies?
Alfie Allen.
Yes.
Was in John Wick.
Yes. He's the one who he's the Russians, John Wick spoilers, the Russians, son who.
Oh.
Yeah.
No.
Yes. That was Alfie Allen.
No, it wasn't.
Yes, it was.
He's the one that kicked it all off. He's the one who, spoiler alert for John Wick, if you haven't seen it already, he's the one that killed the puppy.
Yeah. And Kay even says, yes, he was. See? John Wick. Isof Tarasov.
Is he?
Yes.
That's Yosef, by
Yosef,
the way.
Sorry.
Pronounce your Russian.
Episode, one of me and Jen's favorite character actors and goons from movies is the guy fighting. He's the one that the Mandalorian fights when he's hassling his bounty. His name is Tite Fletcher. And the only reason Jen didn't recognize him is because in John Wick and The Equalizer, where he plays a big muscly goon, he has a mustache that points up, like it's straight and waxed and points up. And he's in it. If you look him up on IMDb, you'll see a picture of him with that titular mustache. And
yeah, it's not spelled the way you pronounced it, I'm sure.
That's what I said. It's pronunciations.
It's T A I T. That's why I say Tite.
Tate.
From Jumanji?
Yeah, he's in Jumanji as well.
Okay.
And Breaking Bad and Westworld and John Wick.
Okay.
And cool. He just plays a big muscly goon.
He just
plays a goon.
I see the mustache.
Isn't it great?
Nice. Way to dolly it up.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic mustache. I literally recognized him, and by the way, he gets it in John Wick. Like, he literally gets shot in the face, slammed into a table, and then shot double tapped in the head. It's rough.
So that was The Mandalorian. Is there anything we want to mention before we sign out this 2-hour episode?
Did
Star Trek Picard?
Mark, did you say your favorite moment?
Sorry, what was that?
Did you say your favorite moment?
Yeah, I did. It was the AT-ST. Well, it wasn't really my favorite moment. It just
We actually did talk about Star Trek Picard on series worth binging, or binge-worthy series. So we did go a bit into that. I do want to mention that there is an old school listener epic fan joke in the fact that the last time Cabot was on this show, we did talk about Star Trek, and now we're talking about Star Wars. Very much like our Dragon Camp panels, where we talked about why Star Trek was better than Star Wars, and then the very next panel was why Star Wars was better than Star Trek, or vice versa.
So can we just set a date in the future where we all get back together to talk about Picard?
Maybe. Maybe when we talk about Picard season two, because we just already talked about Picard.
Did we?
Yeah.
For the why Star Trek is better than Star Wars episode, I did wear a t-shirt that I wrote on it that said Greedo shot first.
Yes.
Wait, he couldn't find that in that one episode.
Yes. No, we've since thrown it away.
Aww.
Yes, we've scaled down a lot. But I do want to thank everyone for joining us live. Thank you for everyone listening to us at home. I did say that the new series was going to be out on May the 4th because that's what I was told. But doing a little research, it says October.
Yep.
So I am lying to everybody and getting your hopes up.
So not only that, but apparently this month,
yeah,
pre-production for season 3 has begun.
Yes, that is exciting, though. Whoop, whoop. That is exciting.
So we'll have to, you know what? We'll have to sit down and maybe do a watch of and talk about some spaghetti westerns. Round the table real quick. Favorites from everybody?
Favorite spaghetti westerns?
Yeah.
Can't think of any that I've actually watched.
Not Shane.
Yeah.
Although I think Jason, what we'll have to do for your show is we will have to do a back-to-back-to-back watch of The Seven Samurai, The Magnificent Seven, and isn't there a brand new remake of The Seven Samurai?
There was a redo of, not The Seven Samurai, but there's an anime of The Seven Samurai, there's the original Magnificent Seven movie, and then they did a new Magnificent Seven movie with Denzel Washington.
Right, that's the thing.
But there's also Yojimbo, the original film by Akira Kurosawa. It had a sequel. I didn't know that. I didn't know it had a sequel. But also...
And rant has started.
No. I'm not ranting. I'm just saying, like, have you guys not seen Tombstone?
No, I didn't even get there. Cause
Tombstone's not a spaghetti western. That came out in the 90s, dog.
The question is, like, how much do you call a spaghetti western? Like, because there are westerns and then there are spaghetti westerns. And we can get into that in a different episode. So I wanted to thank everyone for joining us, but I also want to thank our patrons. Thank you so much.
Guys.
Yes, these guys, making it possible for us to do 2 episodes a month instead of just 1. So I do want to give a big shout out to our top tier big daddy, Jax.
Thank you so much.
Thank you to Jason, who's sitting right here. And thank you to our newest patron because this came in while we were recording.
Woot woot.
Thank you so much, Sassy Charlene.
Thanks, Sassy Charlene.
And I believe Sassy might also be one of the 4 subscribers to the Twitch channel.
Woot.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, Sassy is your first subscriber.
No.
Nope.
No, wait, because they have the number 1 by there.
Yes, the first 10.
The first 10 will have the first.
Get the first badge. But our very first Twitch subscriber is Run For Your Life Matt.
Okay. I was like, because they had the number 1 and I knew that it signified something special.
It does. The first 10 subscribers. So we only have 4 now, so there's 6 more spots for that. But yes, so thank you so much for that. And Sassy is going to be able to get a piece of art because Sassy joined at the $5 level. Everybody at the $5 level and above gets a piece of art every year. We also want to thank Mark Cabot. Thank you very much.
Oh, that guy.
That guy. Thank you to Mark the Encaffeinated One. Thank you to Susanna. Thank you to Lynette. And thank you to Andy Luke. These are all $5 and above. They all get art. Some of them get t-shirts. Thank you to number 1 fan Shane. Thank you to the Radical Geek, Justine, Mike, Steve, Kinsey, Ken, Greg, Patrick, Will, Rich the TT, Ian, Harold, Melissa, the Bathtub Mermaid, Susan, Zach Man, and Dagny, and our out-of-the-box patron, Cookie Druid. Thank you so much. We appreciate all of you. So thank you, everyone, for joining us. Tell us, what are your favorite parts of The Mandalorian? You can email us, get to us on Facebook or any of the other social medias. You'll hear it on the way out. But before we go, Jason, Jen, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find everything that we do over at nerdswithvoices.com, and I'm sure you'll hear something with the voices of Nutty and Tech on it. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com, Nerds with Voices. It's a group. Join us. Have talks and conversations. We'll do all kind of cool things. And, yeah.
There'll be links in the show notes. Yeah. And, Cabot, is there anything you want to plug? Doesn't have to be you.
No. I would love to get together at some point and talk Half-Life, because I have been playing Half-Life Alyx recently, and I've been completely geeking out over it, and I need somebody to talk to about it.
I think that may be able to be arranged with a certain tech over here.
Hi, I'm tech. I have art that I want to show Mark when we're done.
Okay, so thank you so much for joining us, everybody. We'll see you all next time with some Letterkenny, I believe. Bye!
If you like audiobooks and science fiction, you should be listening to Glow in the Dark Radio for free science fiction audio adventure every week, written and read by author and radio host Mike Luoma, me. As an up-and-coming independent writer, I share my work for free each week, chapter by chapter, to get you into my science fiction, I hope. Check out all my books at glowinthedarkradio.com and listen to Glow in the Dark Radio free each week on iTunes, TuneIn, or just head to glowinthedarkradio.com.
Nutty Bites is produced by Nimlas Studios under a Creative Commons Attribution No Commercial Non-Derivatives 3.0 International License. That means you can't change it without my permission. You can share it and send it to your friends. Just link back to me, my site, and everything. We live at nimlas.org, which has links to everything social media, including facebook.com/group/nuttybites and patreon.com/nukejoss, or call 347-NUTTY-42.
Yes, Nutty.
Okay, note to Editor Nutty, go back in that rant and take out where he swears.
Did I swear?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Too much.
You dropped an S-bomb.
Wait. I'm going to make it a clean edit and read from the chat.
Let me give you a clean plate.
Who?
Nutty. She's going to edit this part out anyway. A clean plate here, right? Shoots. There.
No, I'm still going to use my dubs.
You got to get Jax to say Mando.
It's not Jax that says it.
Well, it's whoever does all the serial killer.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go.
Killer say Mando.
Mando.
In his best Carl Weathers impersonation.
Mando.
What was that you were holding up there, Mark? What was that? What was that in your hand? Nutty couldn't see it.
Oh, I believe that is your art.
One art, please.
It's pie art.
I could do that too, Mark. I could do that too.
This is what I call my pie chart.
Your pie chart, and yes, Kaylin, it does sound a lot like Romper Room.
Wait, I got another one.
Yeah, actually, I was going to say, Cabot has one that most patrons don't have.
Are you getting all the pie ones, Mark?
He has a nutty art and a tech art. Hold it up again. That's a tech art.
I feel unloved by you, Tech. I thought we were bros. I thought we worshipped over the altar of the meat, but he has something I do not.
Don't listen to him. He's